On today's podcast, you'll learn how to effectively begin a talk or presentation in English. Welcome to
Aprender Inglés con Reza y Craig.
I'm Reza.
And I'm Craig.
With over 45 years of teaching between us, we'll help you improve your English and take it to the next level. How are you, Craig?
Very well, thank you. How are you?
I'm fine. Have you been busy?
I've been pretty busy working and doing not so much classes, but doing the podcast and doing some new material for the website at mansioningles.com. So, yeah, it's been pretty busy.
Let's get down to business. Have we got any feedback?
We have a voice message from Jesus from Valencia, who speaks about flags and the legend of the Valencian flag, which is called the Senyera. Did you know that?
I heard that word, Senyera, yeah.
Yeah, I didn't know that, so I've learned something from Jesus's voice message. Let's hear from him.
Hello, Craig and Reza. I'm Jesus from Valencia again. I just have listened to the episode where Reza explains the meaning of the North Irish flag. Then I realized that it has things in common with the story of the Valencian flag, and I want to share it with you. As probably you know, the Valencian flag is a variation of the flags of the former Kingdom of Aragon. His name is the Senyera, and it has four red stripes in a yellow background. In the Middle Ages, one ancient king was dying in the battlefield and one loyal soldier was with him. He exclaimed, "Oh my king, don't die. We need a symbol for continuing fighting." And then the king in pain, almost dying, dragged his bloody hand on the yellow shield of the soldier. The four fingers of the hand left four red stripes in the yellow shield. And that's it. It is a legend, and as all we know, legends can be true or cannot, but it seems a beautiful story for me. As last idea, you can tell the story about the flags of the United Kingdom in one episode. I hope you continue with your work. The podcasts are very entertaining and useful. Bye.
Thank you very much for your message, Jesus. Great to hear from you.
Thanks a lot, Jesus. And yes, as you've reminded listeners, I did talk about the flag of Northern Ireland. It's a very strange flag, not very well known. Everybody knows the British flag, and most people know the English flag and the Scottish flag. And some people know the Welsh flag, that one with the dragon on it, which is very peculiar, which I like very much myself. But yeah, the Northern Irish flag, you remembered, is that strange one with a red hand because it's got blood in it. And that's interesting that your story about the Valencian flag has something in common, the blood, I guess. I believe blood is actually a very common factor on flags. I've heard of a few different ones, like I think it was Austria, or is it Poland, is red and white, and it's something to do with some king or some prince covered in blood apart from his belt, which is white or something like that.
Oh, really?
A lot of flags have red to symbolize blood, apparently.
I didn't know that.
Yeah. Very interesting, Jesus.
We spoke about, or Reza spoke about, the flag of Northern Ireland in episode 34. So if you want to listen to that, go back to inglespodcast.com/34.
I did notice a couple of things, Jesus, which you could maybe work on. You said the Middle Age. No, it should be in English plural. It's the Middle Ages. Middle Age is what Craig and I are going through right now.
More like old age, yeah. That's how I feel.
Middle Age is a time for people. But that historic period is always plural in English. The Middle Ages, the medieval period.
And when you began your message, Jesus, you said, "I am Jesus from Valencia," which is a direct translation from soy Jesus. But it's more common in English to say "this is," especially when you answer the phone or you start a message. Say, "Hi, this is Craig from Inglés Podcast," or "Hello, this is Jesus."
Jesus, you used a very interesting word. It was a good use of the word drag. You talked about, I think the bloody fingers being dragged through the ground or something like that. But your pronunciation wasn't quite right. You said drag, then ed, but actually it's one syllable. It's dragged. Because, as we've mentioned before, the pronunciation of ed is usually with a silent e in English, dragged, except for words ending in t and d. So dragged, one syllable.
And one final thing, Jesus, you said we need a symbol for continue fighting. Better to say with the infinitive. So we need a symbol to continue fighting. You've got there the infinitive of purpose. Why do you open a door? To go out the room. Why do you take a chair? To sit down, para hacer algo. So better to say, we need a symbol to continue fighting. And a very interesting story with the king dragging his hand on the yellow silk of the shirt, which I couldn't find on Wikipedia. So I was really interested to hear that that's a legend for the Valencian flag.
And Jesus, to answer your question about talking about the United Kingdom flag, maybe we'll do that in a future episode.
Yeah.
Maybe in the future we'll do that, but we'll need to do a little bit of research ourselves first. Yeah. Because we want to get our information right. But if any other listener has a history about a flag that they'd like to tell us about, why don't you record your voice on SpeakPipe and send it to us? That's at speakpipe.com/inglespodcast. I'm particularly interested to hear about anyone from South America, because of course there are lots of different flags, because there are lots of countries in Latin America, and I don't know anything about the history of those flags.
Me neither. I'd really like to know, for example, why there's a sun on the flag of Argentina, which I think it's really nice that there's a sun there. Is there a reason why you guys have a sun on the flag of Argentina? Let us know, record your voice, and we would love to play that your voice message in a future podcast.
And by the way, if there are any Mexicans listening, I've been living in the Spanish-speaking world a long time, over 20 years, but it was only a few days ago that I discovered the full name of Mexico. I thought it was just Mexico, or maybe something like the Republic of Mexico.
It's Mexico.
I was really confused because there was a Mexican and a person from the United States, some politicians from government.
Is it the Federation of... No.
No, it's the United States of Mexico.
Really?
Los Estados Unidos de México, or Mexicanos. And I was really confused because I saw Los Estados Unidos. I thought, oh, well, that'll be the American, but it's... Yeah. And then I looked more closely and I thought, no, that's a Mexican flag and logo because it's the United States of Mexico.
Well, I was really confused. That's interesting. Yeah. Next, we have a message from our friend Maite from Jativa, who's also one of our sponsors, Maite Parathim Perez. So let's hear what Maite has to say.
Hello, Craig and Reza. It's Maite from Jativa. I like to take part in your podcasts as long as I can. I'll make the most of the occasion during the summer times because, as I said in one of my first audios, I work and study at the same time. Now I'm waiting for the results. Cross my fingers. Besides that, I'd like to thank Mamen and Alberto for their useful contribution for us to improve our English skills. I keep on listening your unbeatable podcasts every day. By the way, I become a hardened alcoholic. Thanks a lot, guys.
Well, thank you very much for sending us your message, Maite. It's always a pleasure to hear from a hardened alcoholic with an excellent accent. So thank you for that.
Well, what does hardened mean, Craig?
Made hard, a ceduro, a hardened, for example, Clint Eastwood was a hardened policeman. He was made hard by years of being a policeman in the violent streets of Los Angeles.
So it's something you've been doing for years, you've got used to it.
Yeah, she's a hardcore, you could also say hardcore, a hardcore listener.
Yeah. So Maite, there's playing with words. It's very sophisticated because it's a very common collocation in English to say a hardened alcoholic.
Yeah.
But she said a hardened alcoholic. So that's a really clever play with words.
Yeah, well done, Maite.
By the way, Maite, we're always happy to hear from you soccer rats from Shativa. maybe someday you'll send us a message explaining the history of Shativa, because if there's one place in the whole of Spain where they might be reluctant to fly the Spanish flag, I believe it's Shativa. Have you heard about the story of Shativa, Craig?
I haven't. Maybe Maite could let us know what that's about. I'd be interested to learn that. So let us know.
In Shativa, to this day, they have a picture of the King of Spain, whoever it happens to be, hung upside down.
Really?
It's a tradition which goes back a few hundred
years. It wasn't just a particular house you was in where they didn't have it.
Some museum or something.
Oh, right.
No, you can read about it on the internet. I don't know the full story, but it's to show their disdain, su disdain, for the Spanish royal family. Mm-hmm. Yes, because in Shativa, they supported the losing side in some battle. And as a mark of disdain, they always hang the portrait of the king upside down. Am I right, Maite? If I'm not, please correct me, but I believe that's the case.
Maite used an expression, as long as I can. She said, I study English, or I study as long as I can. And I wasn't exactly sure what she meant by that. Now, she could mean that when she starts studying, she studies for as long as she can, time-wise, like 2 hours, 3 hours, etc. But she might also have meant whenever I can. Now, in the dictionary, it says that as long as is siempre y cuando, and whenever is cuando sea. Do you have an opinion on that, Reza?
I think she could have meant probably either. Meant whenever.
Whenever I can.
Cuando sea.
Yeah, cuando sea.
I think that's what she meant.
So then in that case, if you did mean, they should have said whenever I can. I study English whenever I can, or whenever I have the time. And you also said, Maite, cross my fingers, which you might say if you want good luck in English, because you do cross your fingers. But in colloquial English, it would be more common to say fingers crossed. So, for example, you could say, I'm waiting for my exam results and fingers crossed, I've passed, for example. Any other points, Reza, in Maite's message?
No, just to say, Maite, that your pronunciation is very good and good luck with your exam results.
Oh, one more thing. Remember, it's listen to, not just listen. So not listen your podcast, but listen to your podcast. Always lovely to hear from you.
Craig, I think we have an email from Mercedes from Madrid.
Yes, Mercedes writes the following. Hi, teachers. It's Mercedes from Madrid. Since I discovered these podcasts some months ago, I try to listen to them all the every weeks. I think you mean every week. I try to listen to them every week. They're really useful to improve my level. Well, thank you, Mercedes. I'm just wondering if you could talk about how to start a talk in English. I'm working as a telecom operator, and sometimes I have to talk for small audiences. Happy to know how is the best way to... You mean, what is the best way, Mercedes? So I'd be happy to know what is the best way to start a talk with something to capture the attention of the public. Maybe an anecdote or a question. Many thanks in advance. Best, Mercedes.
Yes, good question. Good question, Mercedes. And in fact, we did talk a little bit about very general advice about giving presentations way back in episode 12.
That was a long time ago.
Long time. But that was just kind of general advice. But your question is specifically about beginning a presentation.
Mm-hmm. So if you want to go back and listen to that general overview we did on presentations, go to inglespodcast.com/12. So, beginning a presentation, what should you say when you first start to speak to an audience? Well, the first few minutes, in fact, the first few seconds are the most important of all of your presentation. Why? People will be looking at you and they will be looking at your body language. Now, this is something we do without thinking. It's like a reaction. It's something that's in our lizard brains from the very, very beginning of time when we were living in caves and we were reading the body language of strangers that we saw. Were they friends? Were they enemies? So even without thinking, we judge people, we look at them and we make a decision. Do we like that person or not? And also we listen to their voice, their tone of their voice and their intonation. So it's really in the first few seconds of any presentation, it's more important how you say something than what you actually say. Your body language is more important. Your tone of voice is really more important than what you're actually saying. So at the beginning of your talk, you should obviously introduce yourself for people who don't know you. What's your name? Where are you from? Thank people for coming to your talk. And maybe if you feel comfortable, just make a very short comment that it's easy for the audience to relate to, that they can identify with. For example, I might say, "Hi, good afternoon. I'm Craig. Thank you for coming to this talk today. I hope the lovely lunch we've just had won't put you all to sleep." So if you're speaking in the afternoon, you could make a small comment about the lunch or something similar, just so that they can relate to you, so that you already have something in common. Now, to actually start your presentation, you could start with a question, ask the audience a question, or with a problem that needs to be solved. Now, Mercedes works in telecoms, so an example for her could be the following. Has anyone here ever had someone swear at them or verbally abuse them on the phone? Has that happened to you? What would you do in this situation? So immediately you've asked a question, it's related to the topic, you've got people thinking what they would do in that situation, so you've got their attention. Or you could start with some facts, Mercedes, that are maybe surprising. So you could, for example, say, every year, telecom operators receive, on average, 147 personal complaints about their service. 147 complaints. So how can we reduce this number? How can we get this number down? That's another suggestion. Another thing I'd suggest when beginning a talk is to ask your audience to do something. This really helps them to engage with your talk and get them involved in what you're saying. An example for Mercedes would be, okay, put up your hand if you've ever been insulted on the phone at least once this year. Hopefully, some people will raise their hand. Then you say, okay, now turn to the person next to you, speak to the person next to you, and explain how you dealt with it and how you felt. So you're asking your audience to do something. Physically, they have to speak to someone, and they hopefully they're now engaged and involved in your presentation.
So once you've introduced yourself and thanked people for coming and maybe posed a question or a problem or asked the audience to do something, then before you get into the detail of your talk or presentation, you should clearly state the purpose. Tell people what you're going to do because they might not know. And people like to be guided step by step through talks and presentations so they don't get lost. So imagine, for example, you were going to give a talk on a balanced diet in the 21st century. Well, you could begin with something like this. Today, I'll be talking to you about the importance of a balanced diet in the 21st century. So today, I'll be talking to you about is a common way to state the purpose. Another way is this morning, I'm going to tell you about the latest developments in our new project, for example. Another common expression is to take a look at. So what about this? This afternoon, I'll be taking a look at the rise in pop-up shops. Have you noticed that in the first example I said I'll be talking, and in the third I said I'll be taking a look at? So will be plus ing,
future continuous,
is very common for introducing the purpose of a presentation. Or going to. I'm going to take a look. I'm going to talk about. I'm going to. Or there's another way. Our fourth example could be something like this. I've come here today to report on the results of the questionnaire we sent to clients. That's very, very clearly stating your purpose. I've come here today, plus an infinitive, to report, to discuss, to talk about, to tell you, etc. So that's stating your purpose. And then quite often, immediately after that, it's typical to outline, to give a very, very basic kind of plan, outline the structure or format of your talk. In other words, say what the basic key features are going to be and the order. Going back to our first example, do you remember I said, today I'll be talking to you about the importance of a balanced diet in the 21st century. So I stated my purpose. I could follow that with these words. I'll start by identifying the key components of a balanced diet, and then I'll go on to discuss the most effective ways of obtaining those components. So typical language to talk about the structures to say, I'll start by, plus an ing, I'll start by identifying, I'll start by discussing, I'll start by examining. And another typical expression is, I'll go on to, that means that's the next part, I'll go on to discuss, blah, blah, blah. Or if we use our second example, do you remember I said, this morning I'm going to tell you about the latest developments in our new project. I stated my purpose. And then I could outline the former like I could outline the format like this. First of all, we'll look at what has been happening up to now before going on to discuss possible future ideas for the project and then answering any questions you might have. So here I've made it very clear that there are going to be three sections to my talk. First of all, and then the first section, we'll look at blah, blah, blah. Before going on to, the second section, blah, blah, blah. And then answering, and then that's going to be our third and final section in that talk. If I use my third example again, when I stated the purpose, I said, this afternoon, I'll be taking a look at the rise in pop-up shops. Then I could outline the structure like this. We'll begin by outlining the origins of pop-ups. Then discuss their future viability before comparing your own experience with them. So again there, I've made it very clear that there's going to be three sections to my talk. I've said we'll begin by, plus ing, begin by outlining the origins of pop-ups. The second part, then discuss. Discuss is a very common word used in presentation. Discuss their future viability. And the last bit, before, plus ing, before comparing your own experience with them. I'll give you one more example, which is a bit longer, but it's not too complicated. Using our fourth scenario, which started with these words. I've come here today to report on the results of the questionnaire we sent to clients. That's my purpose. And then to outline the structure. After briefly filling you in on how we devised the questionnaire, I'll move on to highlighting the key points of the results and finally examine where we can improve. There'll be time at the end to ask questions. So there, I've made it very clear that there are going to be four sections of my talk. The first part is filling people in and how we devised the questionnaire. The second part, I'll move on to highlighting the key points. And the third part, I'm going to finally examine where we can improve. And then there's going to be a question and answer section, which is very, very common in a presentation. You don't have to have one, but it's very common. And sometimes it's a good idea at the beginning of your presentation to tell people to wait to the end before they ask questions so they don't interrupt you. Or you could say, if you want to stop me at any time and ask questions, go ahead. It's another way, if you like.
One more thing I'd like to add to Reza's points, and that's be very, very careful of using PowerPoint or similar slide presentations. They're very, very overused. Have you ever been in a presentation where you're falling asleep because there's lots of text and numbers and graphs and figures on the board and it's on and on and on and on for ages? I suggest not putting any text on your slides. I suggest maybe using images to help you explain what you're speaking about, maybe photographs that are connected to your points. Don't put up text on PowerPoint and then just read the text. People cannot listen and read at the same time. So if you're saying something different than the text, then they can't concentrate on your voice and read at the same time. And if you're reading what you've written on the slides, why are you speaking? Why just not give them a piece of paper or show them the slides? So it's much more entertaining when the information's coming from you. You are the star. You're the person they've come to listen to. Make sure you deliver the information with your personality. Don't just read PowerPoint slides. It's so boring.
Craig, what do you think about the Prezi format for giving presentations?
I've never used it. I've seen it being used, and I'm not a huge fan. I think it can be distracting, and I've heard that it can actually make people feel a bit sick, a bit nauseous when they're looking at the things constantly moving. So I prefer simple images, photographs, very simple illustrations on some static PowerPoint presentation. You don't need distractions. You just need to be clear. You need to be informative and maybe a little entertaining and just speak from the heart and put your personality into the presentation. I think that's enough. It should be enough.
Craig, what about old-fashioned flip charts?
You mean like the plastic things that people used to write on?
Plastic or paper. Big bits of paper that they wrote on with marker, and then they flipped it up and put it behind the board to write the next one. But if they wanted to, they could come back to it.
Yeah, there's nothing wrong with that, as long as it's illustrating a point. I think it's very tempting to rely too much on visuals. The thing about a visual, anything visual, it's taking attention away from you. So if you're very shy, if you don't feel comfortable speaking in front of people, and not many people do, not many people like it, then it's very tempting to use visuals too much. I think it's better, if you don't like the attention on you, to let the audience do something. Get them to discuss something in pairs. Get them to ask their partner or someone in front of them or someone behind them, get them to ask them something, get them to raise their hand, get them to do something rather than just put up slides or play with paper. So I would rather get the audience involved than use visuals.
Yeah, I totally agree. Craig, just let's remind the listeners that we have already mentioned a very useful book on giving presentations back in episode 87. That was the episode about academic English, because giving presentations is a very important part of university life and academic studies in general. So if you go back to inglespodcast.com, episode 87, you will get a link to that book, but we'll remind you, it's called Presenting in English, How to Give Successful Presentations by Mark Powell.
I'll also put that link in the show notes for this episode, which is inglespodcast.com/170. And there's a book I bought that I thought was quite useful. I'm sure you've heard of TED Talks. They're very popular on YouTube and on the TED Talks website. There's a book written by Carmine Gallo or Gallo called Talk Like TED, T-E-D, Talk Like TED. It's a very good book. It gives examples of really good TED presentations that you could go and study on YouTube and take some useful advice and tips. And I'll give you a link. I'll write the link to that book in the show notes also. So Reza, just to finish, why do you think it's so difficult to give a presentation? And why are so many people scared and frightened by doing it? Why do people get so nervous?
For me, I think it boils down to two things. First, and most importantly, nerves. People get nervous. And when we're nervous, we don't act. We don't function in our normal way. And we know that. We all are aware of that. And we know that it's going to make it more likely that we make a mistake. We know that. And then it kind of feeds off itself. It's a vicious circle. You get nervous. And being nervous, you think, oh no, because I'm nervous, I'm probably going to make a mistake. And that makes you more nervous. And it's just a vicious circle going round and round. And you've got to try and get out of that vicious circle. Because you've got to convince yourself that you know what you're talking about. So there's no need for you to be nervous. And anyway, everybody makes mistakes. And big deal. So what if you get one tiny bit wrong or a couple of sentences wrong? People are going to understand you, and people understand and they empathize, and no one's going to laugh at you. That's the first thing. Mm-hmm. Would you agree?
Yeah, absolutely. It's not a very natural situation to be in. It really, really helps if you know your subject. It's very difficult if you're speaking about a subject that you're not very aware of, a subject you don't know very well. You don't feel comfortable. But if you speak about something that you're 100% comfortable with, you know you can answer questions about, then I think it's much, much easier. But of course, as difficult as presentations are in your language, they're much more difficult if you're not speaking in your first language. And a lot of problems some of my students mention is, well, what about the questions at the end? How can you answer questions at the end? I think we've spoken about this, but the best thing to do is, if you don't understand the question they ask you in English, ask them to repeat it. Ask them to repeat it again. If you still don't understand, then say, I'm very sorry, can I speak to you after the presentation? And then speaking one-to-one, it's much easier to understand exactly what the person's asking. So that can be very, very stressful as well, the question thing.
I think the second key problem in giving presentations might surprise some listeners, and I think it's keeping it short. Quite often people at the beginning worry about, how am I going to fill 10 minutes of a presentation? That's not going to be a problem. Your problem is going to be sticking to 10 minutes and not going longer than 10 minutes. That's going to be your problem. And it's not easy. We tend to talk too much, and it's really hard to decide what is the key, the really vital information, and get it into those 10 or 5 minutes maybe, and cut out the unnecessary stuff. That's really hard to do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, I mean, how can you improve, though? How can you improve your presentation in English? Well, I don't suggest writing the presentation word for word and then reading it. But you could write it just to get your ideas organized, and then transfer your notes or your full text onto cue cards. So you write specific ideas that you want to hit on, that you want to talk about, and then you put them in your words. So, for example, you might have a customer survey. So then you're going to speak for 2 minutes on the results of a customer survey. So you make sure you remember each important point. Make sure you record your presentation, not only audio, but also video. So when I've done presentations in the past, I record the audio on my phone, and then I listen to it as I'm shopping or doing exercise or driving, and then I record it again the next day and try to improve it, and I listen to it again. And when you're constantly listening to it, then you really remember it well. And then you want to record yourself with video so that you can notice your body language. You want to be using your hands. You want to be communicating, smiling, looking people in the eye, making eye contact with the audience. And make sure you look comfortable, that you're not moving around too much and looking nervous. So it's really important to record yourself on audio and record yourself on video, and practice, practice, practice. The more you practice, the more relaxed you'll be, and the easier your presentation will be, and the better it will be. if you practice a lot.
If you get a chance, why not practice in front of real people? In front of your parents, in front of your partner, friends. Practice in front of real people.
Or your pets, if you've got them.
Yeah. And get feedback from them. Tell them if you can improve your body language or your pronunciation, or is there anything they didn't understand?
Do you enjoy giving presentations?
Yes and no. I find it a very mixed sensation. I do feel stress. I do feel anxiety. But even while I'm feeling the stress at the time, I'm also enjoying it. It's weird. What about you?
Yeah, the same. I think the more I do them, the more I enjoy them. And I only enjoy presentations about things that I know well. And we've done a few presentations together, Reza and I've really enjoyed them. It's much easier if you're co-presenting. If you've got someone there on the stage next to you, it's much easier to do it with somebody than be alone. But I do enjoy it. I enjoy the challenge. I enjoy the feeling after. And I enjoy the reaction from the audience, if there is one. I enjoy the fact that I maybe have changed something in them when they finish listening, or they know something that they didn't know before. I think that's very rewarding.
And let me tell you, I've been to quite a few presentations or talks which Craig's given, and he's a very good presenter.
Thank you very much.
I felt really nervous the first time I ever did a presentation with Craig, because he has a lot more experience than me and he's very, very good at it. And I was just worried about cocking it up, meter la pata, for Craig, because I knew he would do it really well, and he did. And I just thought, oh God, I hope I don't muck it up for him.
I'm surprised because you seemed so relaxed.
I seemed relaxed. Maybe do you believe me? I wasn't. But you seemed incredibly relaxed, and that relaxed me the first time we ever did a presentation together.
Oh, thank you very much.
Your apparent confidence, I don't know if you were confident enough, but you appeared to be, that relaxed me a lot.
I was confident when I knew that you knew your presentation. You were okay. I was okay then.
Yeah, I did my research. I learnt my part.
You were very well prepared. And again, that's the important thing. You have to be well prepared. You have to prepare your content, and then the stress will go away once you start speaking. By the way, if you're interested in having Reza and I present on podcasting, we are open to do that in Spain or anywhere if you pay the airfare. So just let us know. You can send me an email, craig@inglespodcast.com.
Or to me, reza@belfastreza@gmail.com.
And thank you very much, Mercedes, for your question for today's podcast. Remember, you can send us a message with your voice, as we've heard in this podcast. And you can do that on SpeakPipe, which is speakpipe.com/inglespodcast. And if you would like more detailed show notes, our Patreon campaign is still running very healthily. Where can people find that, Reza, and who are our lovely patrons?
If you go to patreon.com, Patreon is P-A-T-R-E-O-N, patreon.com/inglespodcast. You could sign up, if you like, to donate some money so that we're able to finally transcribe all our notes professionally. We have some Patreon sponsors, and they are Nicolai, Anna, Pedro, Manuel García, Maite, Lara, María, Sara, Carlos, Zara, Mamen, Juan, Corey Finnerin, Mariel Riedemann, Jorge, Raúl López, Rafael, Manuel Tarazona, Aigus Pauluki, Manuel Velázquez, Néstor García Máñez, that's from the podcast Luces Extrañas, which you can find at Néstor, I better spell it, N-E-S-T-O-R-G-M, Néstor.com. And our latest sponsor, Juan Carlos. Thank you very much to all of you.
Yes, thank you. And also thanks to Anminda from Madrid, Alberto from Granada, and Angelica Bello from Madrid, who are transcribing our shows. We now have full transcriptions for episodes 131 to 142, and also episodes 1 and 2, thanks to Angelica. What's on next week's podcast, Reza?
On next week's episode, we've got Josep's true English story. Josep!
Looking forward to that. So until next week, it's goodbye from me.
And bye-bye from me.
The music in this podcast is by Pitts. The track is called See You Later.